guys, you're back listening to the Unlucky Frog Gaming Podcast. Josh and Ben here, and we are joined by Mark again to have a bit of a chat about games design. Your game that you're working on at the moment, well, worked on, I suppose. we've been playing the prototype, which I mean, disagree with me or don't correct me. Feels like pretty much rules wise a finished product.
I'd say 99%. There might be a couple of niggly things that I might change, but at this stage, when you're never completely happy with a design, they say if a designer will always tinker to try and tweak it, but when you're at that stage, at some point you need to just step back. You do
need to know, right, time to leave it.
The curse of the creator, as they call it. Yeah. But before we talk about that, let's. I want to know what got you into gaming?
Tell me about the real Mark.
Spotlight's in my eyes now.
Yeah.
Well, it started for me back when I was a kid. You had all the kind of usual classics. So I grew up on Monopoly, Go for Broke, all those kind of games. I started off quite early into Games Workshop stuff with my next door neighbours, a few years older than me, and we used to go round to his house, and you know, he started to show me these little bits of painted metal, and I was like, I don't know what this is, but I have to be involved in it. And I started off kind of, I'm talking about like primary school.
Yeah.
I got into Space Crusade, it was, first of all. Really enjoyed that. And then used that to get into the kind of the hard stuff. So I went from that into...
So Space Crusade was the gateway drug.
That was the recreational one. Isn't it?
That was the gadget. And then you're reaching for the crack.
Now it's time to get my hit of lead every weekend.
Now that's us on an explicit rating because we've mentioned drugs.
So well, that was you.
Good effort, boys.
That was you, not me.
back in the day, then what armies did you used to play?
I started off with an orc army, so I've never been one for traditional armies. I've always liked something, especially I think if you're going to play a game that's supposed to be a bit surreal, the last thing you want to be playing is playing another person.
I've never understood that, seeing like video games and things when people choose to play a human. Why?
Exactly. So I like the orcs. I like the fact that they're just kind of, they're alien, but you kind of also relate to them a little bit, and just some of their technology is amazing. I mean, like, I had the squig attack gun, which was an extremely unbalanced model, but fired snotlings into things.
Love it.
Yeah, and it's just...
I think I might have had this model. Was it like a shoulder-mounted thing?
A shoulder-mounted thing with, like, three prongs.
I had this model, And the fluff behind it was that it opened, like, a little gate into the warp, and it would just fire, like, a squig into it, and then it would just pop out into the enemy.
Yeah.
Or into your own troops.
So... I liked that whole kind of random factor. Mm. I didn't fancy the Space Marines because that was just kind of... It just seemed a bit boring to me.
Playing the good guys is never fun.
No.
Hey.
So I did that, and then they kind of revamped Tyranids. So I'd already had like a bit of a taste of Gene Stealers from Space Crusade. But then they re-released kind of... They started bringing out Tyranid, you know, warriors.
I think I remember them coming out because this was when I was just getting into the hobby. So we
kind of early 90s,
early to mid 90s. Yeah. I remember reading White Dwarf and like the Tyranids were like the new release, and yeah, the warriors with like four arms, bone saws,
and claws, and then you had the venom cannons, and even then they still had some kind of really weird weapons like.
Mm.
kind of like the Squig Attack Gun and stuff like that. So they had like this kind of war of attrition thing, so that when you battled the Tyranids, it's supposed to be like an ongoing kind of campaign thing. So what happened was, there was a chance that enemy vehicles started with some, they called a Skulker,
mm-hmm.
which was I kind of picture it to be like a face hugger kind of thing, inside a rhino already. So like, you just roll for everything that they had at the start of the game, there's a chance it just like dies straight away,
yeah.
and stuff like that. So
I'm sure the other players love that.
So we're about the sort of mid-90s now, and so you because you were saying you sort of walked away from the hobby, from gaming at one point, and then you got back into it later on in life.
Yeah. So what happened was, I walked away from it because I kind of got to the stage where you're trying to meet girls. And
I was always going to say that. I bet
you bet discover girls. Women, yeah.
Yeah. I actually had a friend, you know, he was into all the Games Workshop stuff as well, and he was telling me that when he was at high school, he had it was one of the starter sets for the Blood Angels in it, and he was taking it around to his mate's house, and the girl that he was dating at the time saw it, and she was like, "What is that?" And he said, "It's my Space Marines," and then she says, "Well, it's either me or the Space Marines." And he chose his true love,
Space Marines.
Yeah,
good,
so
man.
More power to you.
Is he still playing?
On and off, I think. Yeah.
Fair.
Yeah.
So I think you get this kind of, I can't say midlife, well, I say mid geek crisis, where you are a geek, but until you accept that yourself, you're a little bit embarrassed about it.
You're kind of a geek in the closet.
Yeah, but then as soon as you say, "Do you know what? I'm a geek and deal with it," it doesn't matter. You know, you'll shout it from the rooftops then. Yeah. But up to that point, there's this kind of a bit of a reservation, or what, you know, what people going to think of this. So
you're absolutely right, actually, because I mean, like, everyone at work now knows that I'm a massive nerd, and that I love like Dungeons and Dragons and all that sort of stuff, and that they're all just fine with it. But before I actually told anyone, and I was getting on with them really well in the office, I had this like small anxiety that somehow it would someone would find out, and they would do that classic, "Oh, nice models, nerd."
Wedgie. Yeah. I think I kind of accidentally outed you to Joanne when you first started going out as well.
I think I'd mentioned beforehand. Yeah. Joanne's my girlfriend, by the way. Long suffering girlfriend, but bless her patience.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure I'd mentioned beforehand. But I mean, the fact of the matter is, I think when you enter adulthood, you kind of realise, well, the people who I want to spend time with, I'm either going to be into this as well, or they're not going to be into it, but they're not going to care.
Yeah.
You know? So you start to become a lot more comfortable with it.
Yeah.
How long ago did you get back into gaming then?
I'd say it's a fairly recent thing, so you're probably only talking about maybe 3 years.
Right.
Something like that. And all it was I'd came back home, and kind of, it was a bit nostalgic for me coming back and being back in my mum's house and remembering that that's what I used to do in there, you know.
Yeah.
I used to have a corner set up and painting, and you know, that way, like, I kind of went from playing Warhammer to focusing on computer games. And then when I moved back there, I didn't have my telly or my PlayStation or anything set up.
Yeah.
So I was like, I need something else to do. And I was like, I just fancied, I think you get some kind of serenity, I think, when you're painting, you know, that way, like,
absolutely.
And I just took a real notion to, you know, I was like, I just really want to paint just now. I don't know why, but I just feel like that's what I want to do.
When I really want to unwind, I paint.
Yeah, because you just kind of switch off, and
that is your sole focus. It's like guys that fish say that as well. Like, you know, when they're fishing, that is all they're doing. And I think that's why painting is so therapeutic.
I think you get kind of tunnel vision and you don't even notice what's going on round about you. Mm. You're literally focused on this one thing in your hand,
mm-hmm.
and that's it. So, yeah, I did that, but I'd kind of, at that time, the only thing I was aware of still was Games Workshop, even though I hadn't looked at it for a while. So, jumped on eBay to pick up a couple of bits and bobs that I could, bought some paints, bought some models to have a look. And then it was just while surfing through eBay that I started to come across other companies that did the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
And like, first time round, Games Workshop was the only place you could go for that stuff. And then all of a sudden, you're finding your Privateer Press, your Mantic Games, all these companies that were doing the same thing.
So was it different ideas. It was noticeably bigger when you came back to it?
The whole hobby had expanded from being like one kind of almost kind of niche, I would say, into kind of more
almost mainstream, but not quite.
Not quite mainstream, but yeah, just generally a bit more
like a culture available, in its own right, yeah.
A bit more just kind of accessible,
uh-huh.
I think, mm-hmm. to people. So, yeah, that's kind of what drew me back in. And then that's when I started to find all these different other things that, you know, that stemmed off just that one eBay search, basically. That's how I found out about Kickstarter. Up to that point, my only experience at Kickstarter was I had a friend that had talked about buying a watch off it. And I remember him saying he'd paid like 250 quid to get this watch, but it had a number on it to say that he was like backer number 11 out, like limited run of 200 or something like that.
Right. But
until that point, you know, even Kickstarter itself wasn't on my radar at all. So, I mean,
you got back into tabletop 3 years ago,
yeah.
You said. So that's quite a quick turnaround from returning to the hobby to being a designer. So how did that come about?
So what happened was, I'd kind of like what geeks do when they find something new that they like. They hit it hard, right?
Yeah.
So I'd went on, you know, before I knew it, I had a collection of like 20 odd games that
mm-hmm.
I hadn't even looked at yet.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? They're all just sitting on this shelf. And yeah, just, you know, I did that and I realised that I wasn't working at the time, so I'd nobody to play them with.
Mm-hmm.
And I still had my PlayStation and I was playing a lot of Fallout, but while I was playing it, I sat down one day and I played it for about 6 hours, and I realised in that 6 hours, I'd achieved nothing. I'd wandered about, killed some things, found some gear, but actually like hadn't done anything to drive the story on or anything like that.
Uh-huh.
And I thought, there's got to be a better thing that I can do with my time than just wander about doing nothing in a virtual world. So yeah, so it kind of started getting kind of cogs worrying a bit about, you know, at that point it wasn't even that I wanted to make something myself, but I just wanted to do something more analog. I was kind of fed up staring at screens all the time. So,
yeah.
You know, you go from the TV, you know, you play the game, and then you come off that, and then first thing you do is you pull out your phone. You're looking at your phone screen, mm-hmm. and you know that way it's like it's
quite an isolating experience.
Yeah. So even playing online games, I began to realise that I had no attachment to anyone that I was playing with. Like, somebody could literally die while they were playing that game, and I wouldn't be any the wiser, and it wouldn't affect my life in any way, and that was a bit kind of sad to me a bit. So mm-hmm. I was like, you know, I want to start getting more involved with people and more involved, like, socially, just playing games. So that's when I started kind of looking into clubs and stuff like that. And I hadn't even, I didn't say, right, I'm going to be a game designer now.
Yeah.
I just kind of, I'd had a dream one night and I woke up and I just thought, I have to write some stuff down.
Uh-huh.
And like I got up at 6 o'clock in the morning and just like, actually the first thing I wrote was like a fluff story.
Uh-huh.
And it's not like, I don't write for a living or anything like that. I worked in construction, so it's not like it had, you know, I had any of the skills to do any of it. I just felt like I had to do this thing and I just started writing it, and it was more for my kind of, for my own sanity, I would say, probably more than anything else, you know what I mean? Yeah. I was like, I just want to do something and I want to kind of maybe just a little bit of a creative outlet, but not really intending for it to go anywhere.
So a creative outlet, but at the same time, one that allowed you to do it in a social capacity as well.
Yeah, so it just started off, I wanted to play board games and I had nobody to play with. So the next best thing was, other than soloing a game, was just kind of write about games. So That's what I did. And then I just happened to kind of start throwing together some rules for what I thought would be, right, if I wanted to make like Fallout into a board game, how would I do it? And so I thought, right, it takes too long to walk everywhere, so it has to be cars. You know, you need to be able to get about quicker.
Yep.
And I kind of started off with that design. It was kind of like Command and Conquer, where you couldn't see the map. You know, you had to kind of reveal the map, which is why my games tend to have tiles on them. But then I quickly realised, like, as a multiplayer, that didn't work, because I always knew where the other players were, even if technically I shouldn't know.
Yeah.
So I was like, right, so that's not going to work. So distilled it down into what I thought was a core element, which would be when the players met. And so I wrote some stuff down, and then I just happened to take it to my brother and I said, look, I says, I've come up with this. You know, we always played games together as a family, like at Christmas time. And I was like, right, I've wrote this thing down. He says, you know, why don't we just try it? And we played through it, and it was broke all over the place, you know. So many things wrong with it. But he's like, do you know what? He says, it's actually, there is still something there under all that that, you know, that could possibly turn into a game. So I just kind of just kept going with it then. And then what happened was, kind of April time, Compulsion came on my radar. So that's like kind of the Edinburgh kind of games festival. Yeah, yeah. And the only reason I went to that was because they were doing so you want to design your own game. They had a kind of like a talk thing. So you had, Bez was there, Richard Denning was there, Andrew and Jenny Harmon from Yay Games, they were there as well. So I kind of sat there, and there was maybe six people there, and I'd already made my game. I took it with me. I walked about this place for 5-6 hours, but didn't show it to a single person. It just stayed in my bag the whole time. But, you know, I went into this seminar thing, and they said, right, says, we don't really have a format, so just ask us questions. So put my hand up and I said, right, you know, what about this? Okay, here's your answer. And then I looked about, nobody else was asking anything, so I basically just quizzed them on absolutely everything that I wanted to know. So, you know, so I started asking about Kickstarter, about how, you know, just all the different processes involved, because nobody else was asking anything. And I was like, well, I'm taking, yeah, I came here for this.
I was just going to say, like, may as well.
Yeah, I was like, so I'm just going to take full advantage of this opportunity to speak to these people. I just kind of gathered all the information then, and I was like, right, I kind of feel like I can start advancing it onto the next level.
Sure. So you, Mark was kind of not only to bring the current version of Wreck and Ruin tonight, but also some of the previous parts of the previous iteration, yes, as well. So this is the very early. We're still on squares,
yes,
aren't we? So
the game originally started off on square tiles that joined together to make a 3x3 grid. So that was your map. It still had the kind of map creation,
mm-hmm,
element of it. So like I said, when I first played with my brother, you still had the 5 actions,
mm-hmm,
but there was no limits on what you could do with them. So what happened was you could literally drive the big rig up from one end of the map to the other. Yeah, and just blast everything else out the way and it like not even touch any of the other, uh-huh, stuff.
I think that would be fun to do once. And then if it happened every game, that would be a pain.
Yeah, so it got to the stage, I was like, right, so I need to put some limitations on this. So as you play test, you kind of distill down, you know, what you're doing. So you're like, right, I can't have one vehicle getting used all the time. So you need to cap how many things, mm-hmm, it can do and, you know, what it can do. So you're like, right, all of a sudden, a vehicle can only move once. Because if you imagine a turn as a set amount of time,
yeah,
then it can only do so much in that, sure, time. So, yeah, and I had that, and so I'd kind of changed it to the 5 action points with the limits, and then I went to Aircon 3, which was the last one they did in Bradford.
Mm-hmm.
And this was my first kind of showing it to people out with my own circle.
And just in terms of, so I've got some reference for time, like how long has it been now that you've, right, been working on this?
Yeah, so I started it in January 2016.
Sure.
Is when I started it. So just kind of coming up to the 2-year mark now.
Yes. Yeah.
So after 10 months,
mm-hmm,
of working on the game, I thought I had something that, you know, at the time I thought this was the finished product.
Yeah.
As you like, you know what I mean? I was like in my total like wet behind the ears. I was like, you know, nailed it first time, mm-hmm, you know. You know, how hard could it be?
Why isn't everyone doing this game design in Malarkey?
Exactly, yeah. I'll be able to toss out another 5 of these every year or something like that. And I went there and I booked myself in for a playtest slot.
Mm-hmm.
And again, I'd carried the game about with me, and I was playing games all day.
Mm-hmm.
And then I was like, playing with this group of guys, and I was like, I need to go now. And they're like, oh, how come? I said, oh, I've got my game to play test. And like, you've sat here the whole time, you've got a game, and you didn't even tell us.
Yeah.
Kind of thing. So I went up there, and I was feeling quietly confident. I set the game up, and I gave the spiel about my game. And so we set it up, it was a 3-player game. Now remember, we're on a 3x3 grid.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So we had 2 players directly opposite and then 1 in the middle.
Mm-hmm.
Right, so I hadn't quite worked out how to balance setup,
yeah, yeah,
for a start, right? So we got one turn in each, mm-hmm, and I was getting ready to gear up for the next turn. I said, right, what happens next is, and then basically all the bits get put down and said, right, this is why your game is broke. And up to that point, I kind of hadn't really experienced any kind of criticism, mm-hmm, you know. So like me and my brother had been kind of bouncing ideas off each other, yeah, but you know, he'd say, well, why don't you do this? I'd say, I don't really like that. Why don't you do this? Oh, that might be pretty cool, let's try that. And but this was the first time where I'd actually like been, it wasn't meant as a nasty way, but still quite,
it would feel brutal.
Constructive, yeah, criticism, but it was quite cutting.
It was constructive criticism, but at that point when I've never received criticism before, it feels like a personal attack, and it's not meant to be, but
it's your baby, yeah, as well, isn't it?
So I've spent 10 months at this point working on it, and you know, that way you're like, you know, I poured all my blood, sweat and tears into this, and then somebody tells you it's a load of rubbish. And you're like, right, well, I've got two options from here. I either ignore the advice of what everyone's telling me, and I think that I know better and just continue with what I'm doing, or I actually listen to them and take on board what they're saying, make the changes.
Do you know what I love there? Is that you said that you had two options and one of them wasn't giving up.
No, I'd never give up.
Excellent.
Yeah.
That's not in my vocabulary.
Yeah.
So I kind of, that day I was destroyed. Like, my playtest slot finished about 3 o'clock. And I kind of left maybe an hour after that. I was supposed to show the game to a YouTuber.
Mm-hmm.
And actually just, I couldn't even look at anyone. I just literally left and just went for my train because, you know, I mean, the wind was knocked out of me by that point. And
yeah.
I was like, you know, I'm done. But I woke up the next day and I knew what I had to do. And I was like, right, let's try this. So I went back. I stripped the whole thing. The whole thing had to be stripped right back from the start. So what the feedback was squares don't work for vehicles because vehicles don't always turn 90 degrees.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that way.
Gradual turn.
Yeah. So it felt too clunky for vehicles. So it said what should be like a kind of nice fluid movement just feels, mm-hmm. just doesn't feel right. And I was like, right, okay. And the advice at that point was try hexes. You know, you can still do the same kind of stuff with hexes. It gives you a wider range. So I was like, right, okay. So I went back to the drawing board, basically stripped it all back because that affected how I moved, how mm-hmm. you targeted,
mm-hmm.
affected everything. And so stripped it all back, even the artwork, everything kind of was all designed to fit into squares, and all of a sudden it was useless. So at first I tried to kind of fit it into a hex grid, and then I thought I'm wasting time here, so I just deleted it and then started all over again. But after doing it, I could see the difference. It made a better game.
Yeah.
You know, and that's what it should be about. It shouldn't be about I'm a designer and I know best. It should be about making the best game that you know, making the best version of that game that you can. So
yeah.
After having that feedback, you know, that way it's like, you know what they say, what doesn't kill you makes you stronger kind of thing. That's how it felt.
Better or better as well, mm-hmm. that's the other one.
Yeah, so I came back from that. Initially beat up, but came back and was like, right, you know, let's do this and let's...
And your game came out better for it as well?
Oh, definitely. Like, it affected things that I hadn't even considered before. Like, so all of a sudden, it solved the issue that I had with player setup
mm-hmm.
by
mm-hmm.
by bringing in this hex flower, if you like, with the 7 hex tiles.
Yeah.
All of a sudden, no matter how many players I had, it could always be equal.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it solved that problem, and then solved all the movement problems, and it just the thing that surprised me was how more aesthetically pleasing it looked, because it didn't look like any game that I'd ever played.
Mm.
Just the shape of that kind of the shape of the map. I was like, I was always used to boards being square.
Yeah.
You know, because that's what you grow up on. So all of a sudden to try a completely different shape, and I was like, I like the fact that it even just looks different from anything else. Yeah. So
it's really interesting as well, just such a, what is on paper, such a subtle change. Change your squares, the squares that you're using for movement, to hexagons, but as you're just describing, like, everything in the game is affected by it, and it's improved it.
And you'd not believe how many times I've had to go through the rule book, change the word square to hex, and still miss all these references to squares like 6 months later, And you're like, I even do that, was it the control search? And I'm like, how can I still be missing them?
Yeah.
But it's, where are you? Come on.
There's nothing worse than like you go to a printer's and you get a load of cards printed off and then you notice one says square on it and you're like, I've not even used squares for a year.
So obviously you went through a few iterations of the game, and earlier this year you took it up to Kickstarter. Unfortunately, you didn't meet your target at that point.
Yeah.
So what's been the takeaway from that? Why do you think you weren't able to meet the target there?
I think launching the Kickstarter, even though failing, is still a worthwhile experience.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think for me, what I was used to was I'd always backed games that were wildly successful.
Mm-hmm.
So I was used to updates, I was used to smashing stretch goals, you know, I was used to seeing all that kind of stuff. And so what happened was I was sitting maybe 20 odd percent funded,
uh-huh.
you know, within the first few hours.
Mm-hmm.
So I did get quite a good start, and but then what happened was, like, after the first 2 days it dies a death and you're watching it, and then, you know, you see the occasional pledge drop off. It tells you like exactly who's came in, who's came out,
yeah.
and all that kind of stuff, and that's quite a bit soul destroying as well. And then Richard of We're Not Wizards actually messaged me and he said, are you going to do an update? And I was like, well, I don't know what to say because nothing's really happened.
Uh-huh.
And he's like, doesn't matter, just do an update.
Mm-hmm.
And then, like, it took that kind of, the penny kind of dropped in that I still had to be involved, even though, you know, I still had to interact. So that's what I would take away from that, is like,
just always be communicating with the backers.
Like, Richard's always praised me for my interaction with on Facebook and stuff like that. You know, I always post, I always share, I always engage anyone mm-hmm. that talks to me. And but then just all of a sudden when I went on this thing, I clammed up a bit.
Mm-hmm.
And a part of that was because Facebook basically banned me from doing anything for a week.
You were telling us earlier, yes.
Yeah, which was horrific, so I couldn't share on any of the groups.
They said it got marked as spam.
Yeah,
because you were updating daily.
No, because it wasn't even that I was updating daily. What happened was I shared a post to 30 groups.
Right, okay.
Which, to be fair, is not an unusual practice for me.
No.
I do that every other week as well, but for some reason, just this one time, it decided that, I don't know if somebody had reported it or something, but it came up as spam, so I was like, right, couldn't, all of a sudden I couldn't engage with any of those people anymore, so.
Mm-hmm. Which is an absolute, like, the last thing you want to happen during a Kickstarter campaign.
So, I mean, I was quite lucky. I had content coming in from reviewers mm-hmm. and stuff like that, which helped. But I think part of the reason why I didn't fund is to do with timing, I think.
Well, I seem to recall, so it was early October.
Early October, and
at around about the same time we had the Resident Evil 2 Kickstarter went live, which
from
was
Steamforged.
Yeah.
So Resident Evil 2 was live, but I launched the same day as the Seventh Continent.
Ah.
Right, which I had backed first time round.
Yeah.
Endure the Stars 1.5.
Yeah.
Which I backed first time round.
all these old friends betraying you.
Yeah.
It too, Seventh Continent.
Gloom of Kofourth also came back as well. So that was three games that I'd backed that already had established followings and already had their games. Basically, they were already on the radar because mm-hmm. people had just kind of we're starting to get
and
them.
This is one of these weird things, not just with Kickstarter, not just with trying to launch a board game, just with life. Success breeds success.
Yeah.
And when people are aware that, oh, these have been backed already, well, I'll go with that. So that's obviously going to be a point of frustration for you as well. But you are coming back next year to Kickstarter. Can we say what date it is?
6th of March.
We'd love to have you back closer to the time. We will have you back.
We'll be playing Kingdom Death long before.
Excellent. Yes. But we'll get some hype built for Wreck and Ruin. So keep your eyes peeled on Kickstarter next March for that. Mark, thank you so much for coming on the show.
No problem. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, been an absolute pleasure, and definitely have you back in. But I think with that, we'll draw things to a close. So thanks very much, guys, for listening. We'll catch you all next time.
See you again.